Hello, and welcome to the Community IT Innovators Technology Topics Podcast, where we discuss nonprofit technology, cybersecurity, tech project implementation, strategic planning, and nonprofit IT careers. Find us at communityit.com. Thank you for joining Community IT for this podcast, Part 1. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating to help others find this leadership resource for nonprofits. Listen for Part 2 in your podcast feed.
Welcome, everyone, to the Community IT webinar, the 2024 Nonprofit Cybersecurity Incident Report with Matthew Eshelman. This is our sixth annual incident report, and this is a very popular webinar. Every spring, Matt studies the incidents that were reported at thousands of our client users over the course of the year before, so in this case, 2023, and he looks through and does analysis and determines the trends and changes that matter the most to nonprofits. So he's going to cover best practices, evolving around cybersecurity, AI-enabled scams, smishing, adversary in the middle attacks, fake in-person event phishing, which I had not heard of, but I'm glad to know about it, and the return of pop-up malware, and a bunch of other new and disturbing trends. So my name is Carolyn Woodard. I'm the Outreach Director for Community IT. I'll be the moderator today, and I'm very happy to hear from our cybersecurity expert, Matt. But first, I'm going to go over our learning objectives for today. So at the end of the day, we hope that you will have learned our basic approach to cybersecurity, learn the trends in the attacks and the organization protections that we saw in 2023, understand evolving security best practices, and learn the role of governance, policies, and training in protecting your nonprofit from these common scams. So Matt, would you like to introduce yourself?
Great. Well, thanks for that introduction, Carolyn. And yes, I am looking forward to the webinar today. As Carolyn mentioned, this is our sixth annual Nonprofit Cybersecurity Incident Report, something that I created over 6 years ago. I've been at Community IT and involved in the nonprofit tech sector for over 20 years. And initiated this Nonprofit Cybersecurity Incident Report as a way to provide information that's specific to the sector about the threats that are facing our nonprofit clients.
And before we begin, if you're not familiar with Community IT, I wanted to tell you a little bit more about us. We are a 100% employee-owned managed services provider, and we provide outsourced IT support. We work exclusively with nonprofit organizations, and our mission is to help nonprofits accomplish their missions through the effective use of technology. So we are big fans of what well-managed IT can do for your nonprofit. And of course, that includes cybersecurity. We serve nonprofits across the United States. We've been doing this for over 20 years, and we are technology experts. We are consistently given the MSP 501 recognition for being a top MSP, and that's an honor we received again in 2023. So I want to remind everyone that for these presentations, Community IT is vendor agnostic. We only make recommendations to our clients and only based on their specific business needs. We never try to get a client into a product because we get an incentive or benefit from that. But we do consider ourselves a best of breed IT provider. So it's our job to know the landscape, know what tools are available, reputable, and widely used. And we make recommendations on that basis to our clients based on their business needs, priorities, and budgets. So you probably hear us mention several tools today, and there are many other tools that are out there. So just to set that standard that we are agnostic around the tools. Next, we are going to do a poll. All right, so the first poll I would like to get things started is, has your org had a cyber incident in 2023 or organization? So there's a lot of stigma around having an incident, and it's something that happens a lot. So your options are no, not that we know of, right? Not sure, right? Maybe something. Yes. But we discovered with time to mitigate the impact, or yes, and we suffered significant impact from that attack, or not applicable or other. we're not going to be able to see your names or your organization, that something happened at your organization. If you're a little bit shy about putting that out there, totally understand. But this is just a way to like see how people are doing in general with being attacked. And Matt, can you read the results?
All right. Thanks to everyone for responding. So it looks like the majority of folks said no, not that we know of, with another 8% saying that they are not sure that they have attack. Yes, the folks that said yes, we discovered it, but with time to mitigate the impact was about 20%. And then a very small portion said yes, we suffered significant impact. And then a handful of folks said not applicable and other. And I think that's good to see. Again, no organization is immune, right? I mean, I think every organization, you know, would probably have some things that would maybe considered cybersecurity incidents, and we'll actually talk about the definitions of what that is later on. But again, organizations are not immune.
So I think we wanted to start out, Matt, with our approach to cybersecurity and kind of lay some of the groundwork of, you know, how we think about it and how we advise our clients to think about it.
Yeah, thanks for, I think, framing things and kind of moving into, understand a little bit more about how we think about our approach to cybersecurity at Community IT. And so if you've been attending these over the years, you may notice that we've got a little bit of a refresh into what this graphic looks like. But I'll also say that the core concepts around cybersecurity haven't really changed much since we developed this model over 6 years ago. You know, these foundational concepts like rooting things in policy, to provide guidance for technical solutions that can be built on top, adding in that layer of security awareness training so that we have staff who are educated and engaged about the very real risks that they face, is most of the attacks that we see in this kind of small to mid-sized nonprofit space that we work in, right? So organizations that are between 15 to 50, maybe up to 200 or 300 staff are really, you know, initiated by things, you know, as benign as clicking on a link in an email that they shouldn't have, you know, that they shouldn't have, or being tricked into updating some payment information or buying gift cards, that kind of a thing, right? So rooting the controls in policy, having an engaged and informed staff, and then we move up into the range of technical solutions that are really put in place to monitor and protect and recover when something does happen. And then we look at building on top of that or laying atop what we have called predictive intelligence or perhaps AI-driven tools. You know, I think that's certainly the buzzword now. And I think it's relevant as well as these AI solutions are being incorporated into many of the tools that you already have or are looking at adopting. So again, I think while this model is old, I think it continues to provide a good framework for us as we talk about cybersecurity and how to think about building an effective cybersecurity protection plan at the organizations that we support and the organizations that are just looking for a way to kind of figure out where to invest and what to focus on.
This graphic is in our cybersecurity download, the playbook for nonprofits on cybersecurity, which is a free download on our site. And you can find it there. And that download goes into more detail and kind of more action items, as well as how you can manage your cybersecurity at your nonprofit. And that is a free download. Before we get to the analysis this year, I think, can you tell us a little bit about the bigger picture of what we're seeing in cybersecurity these days?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it is helpful to understand kind of the overall cybersecurity landscape that we all operate in. And again, I think this is something that I like to reiterate, kind of at any opportunity I have, is that cybersecurity and kind of that risk really impacts every organization. You know, your organization is not too small, or your mission is not too good to avoid or be immune from these attacks. I think it's helpful to understand that in general, this is a cyber crime operation, and the cyber criminals, you know, really are going to work, and it's not a hobby. I think that there is certainly that opportunistic or, kind of hackers that are kind of doing it for fun and entertainment. But for most of the organizations, right, you're being targeted for financial gain of the people that are working. And so it really is, it's a financial driven operation. And we know from, the FBI and the crime stats, right, that amount of revenue lost directly to financial fraud is pretty staggering. I think the other things, and if you're in a finance or an operations role, you'll notice is that the cyber liability insurance, those controls continue to get ratcheted up year after year. I think we are finally seeing this year that the cost increase associated with cyber liability insurance has finally started to level off a bit after having several years of, 50 to 100% price increases. The actual cost of cyber liability insurance is going down. I actually had a client renew for less than they paid the previous year. I think that's still the exception rather than the rule, but understanding that the cyber liability insurance providers are insisting on more and more serious and significant controls. But as a result, I think they're also getting better results and having less payouts as a result of that. Also, the financial audits, they continue to expand their scope. And so it's not just the financial numbers that they're looking at. But insofar as that this is a cyber crime, I think it's helpful to think about this as cyber crime. They're also concerned about financial risk associated with lax IT controls. And so we're also seeing the audits extend into the IT control world to say, hey, how are you protecting your organization? How are you making sure that we're not going to be victims of fraud? I think the other thing that is new this year is really that, kind of the ubiquitous access to artificial intelligence, kind of the election, deepfakes, kind of all of the things that can be put into place in support of that initiatives of kind of tricking people into believing something. There was an example where an AI likeness of a CFO was actually used as part of a digital meeting to facilitate financial fraud. And so that these things are moving out of sci-fi and into real life. And so some of the traditional things that we have talked about in terms of, how can you identify a scam email? Maybe it's poorly written. With how easy it is to go into ChatGPT and say, hey, write me a compelling fundraising email, the hackers are doing the same thing in order to create a good, copy to include in their messages. And so I think it just means that we all need to be extra vigilant and continue to educate and look at additional solutions to help protect our organizations against that type of escalating fraud.
And I know we want to talk about some of the trends this year that we've seen.
Yeah. So in terms of the trends that we are seeing, a lot of this is kind of continuation. There are a couple of new things that we identified in 2023. But again, there's just massive amounts of generic and automated attacks. The adversaries are getting really good at using kind of all the tools and automation to just do this at scale. The volume and velocity of attacks continues to increase. We'll see later in the data that those, kind of spoofing and phishing attacks and even account compromise are still quite common, unfortunately. In 2023, we really saw some new technologies or new techniques being used by these hackers called Attacker in the Middle, or AITM, if you're into acronyms, as a way to insert themselves between kind of your computer and the destination website that you're going to, whether that's Google Workspace or Microsoft 365, in order to steal not your password, but the little authentication token that actually is used to authenticate you as a user. And so so that technique really contributed to a significant increase that we saw in compromised accounts. And so that had a pretty dramatic impact in the data that we saw. Some other things that we saw, I think, with a lot greater frequency here in 2023 are the use of QR codes as a way to get organizations or get an individual to move outside of an organization-protected resource. So again, the message that you get via email, is pretty generic, but it has a QR code in it. And so if you scan the QR code with your phone, now all of a sudden, instead of being on a protected work laptop, now you're on an unprotected or unmanaged phone, and you know, they're going to ask you to, you know, log in with your credentials, and maybe that's another opportunity for them to steal and steal that access token. So again, the use of QR codes as part of spear phishing messages was new. The other thing that we saw, and this was really focused on some of our public sector clients that are doing government or government adjacent work, is that the phishing schemes became really complex, including several cases where we had individuals that are clients interacting with adversaries that were inviting them to in-person meetings or conferences in DC. And so we had a case where, you know, somebody got, you know, an invite to go meet with some underling government minister for lunch, and they showed up and there was nobody there, but they had, you know, the invite, they had the attachment with the talking points, and it's all part of the ruse, right? When you boil it down, you know, they're trying to create an environment where you open up an attachment, right? So that's fundamentally what it comes down to. But the fact that they incorporated, a lunch meeting at a hotel that was very close, or, you know, a lunch meeting at a restaurant that was very close to the organization's office. We had another case where they're invited to a, you know, kind of a small conference at a hotel, again, kind of in the area. Person kind of followed up because they thought it looked suspicious, and the hotel's like, we have no record of this meeting being on our books. So again, hackers being very creative in terms of inventing scenarios to elicit that response. And so I think it just means that we need to continue to be vigilant and exercise good judgment when, kind of figuring out why am I opening up this attachment? Like, this seems kind of unusual, and trusting our instincts there.
Exactly. I think that's one of the things that we've been talking about, is that the AI makes that social engineering more realistic. Like, it's no longer the Nigerian prince who wants you to transfer some money to their account. It can be very, very realistic. So just keeping that suspicious outlook, I think, is one of the most important things. So that is a great coverage of what the hackers are trying to do. Can you tell us more about these trends in what the operations are trying to do to prevent it?
Yeah. So, you know, as I touched on in the previous slide, that cyber liability insurance and that regular audit and stronger controls, I mean, I think we do see that making a meaningful change for organizations. I think in the nonprofit space, you know, investing in cybersecurity can seem like a daunting task. It requires additional financial investment. And if it's not something an organization has to do, they tend not to do it. So the fact that organizations are being required to make investments in their internal cybersecurity controls in order to be able to get cyber liability insurance, I think is a side of, you know, I view it as a positive side effect, you know, and it gives organizations a reason to invest. And so I think that's a positive thing. And again, the audits, again, are another reason why organizations are investing, because unless they make that investment to, you know, require MFA for everything, or maybe they're going to make that investment in, you know, additional security awareness training for staff, or pursuing endpoint EDR, endpoint detection response technologies, or maybe even investing in a SIM, those are good steps for organizations to take. I'd like them to do it, you know, in the absence of that external, stick in higher cyber liability insurance premiums. But so I view that as a good thing, even if it's a little bit after the fact. As Carolyn, and we've talked about, you know, the AI enabling new protections, and it also enables new scams and these cons. Again, I think everything is just moving so quickly. And so I think it means, you know, we need to be all that more vigilant whenever, you know, making these evaluations. I think on the good side of things, these AI tools to improve security, I think, are not necessarily just being kind of extra silo solutions that you need to add on, but vendors, I think, are really moving pretty quickly to add on additional capabilities within their existing tool set. And so I think, you know, be patient and kind of those improvements are going to come to maybe tools that you already have. And again, it is kind of an escalating arms race in terms of new and novel uses of AI tools to create new content and create new engagement versus the tools that are designed to combat that. I do think that, and we've seen that training and that internal culture are still absolutely critical. And that's why it's still a foundational piece whenever we talk about cybersecurity. Again, you get a really great return on investment of training and educating your staff. And my view is that that's a really good investment. And while you can do a lot and invest in tools, they are, at the end of the day, they are technical and they are also fallible. And so things are going to get to your staff that make it through the best, you know, multi-layered defense technology tools. And so engaging with your staff, training them, providing ways for them to interact with your IT or your security team, and creating a culture of learning as opposed to kind of a culture of punishment and shaming, I think is really important. You know, that is why we talk, you know, in that initial poll question, like, hey, like cybersecurity incidents are stuff that happens to everybody. And if you can be able to reflect that and say, hey, like I looked at this, this looked weird, or I clicked on it, and then I thought maybe I shouldn't have, right? That's talk to your IT team or partner as soon as you can, as opposed to waiting until after the fact. So, and then finally, you know, landscape trends. I mean, I love to talk about policy and governance, right? That's all really important. You know, these solutions, you know, we cannot just, you know, drop in a technical solution and expect to solve all of our cybersecurity issues. It really involves, you know, kind of the organizational element, the human element as well. And so all of those policies that you see here in terms of how we're handling our data, how are we adopting and using AI tools, you know, our incident response, like who do we talk to? What are the processes in place? Where do we put our incident response plan? You know, all of those are important for an organization to have because, you know, they're going to be called on, you know, when you do have that security incident. And so, you know, for the 2% of you that said, hey, we already had a cybersecurity incident, you know, hope those are in place. For the 98% that said, you know, not this past year, you know, it's your time is coming. So it's good to have those things in place so that they're available when you do need them.
I'm going to jump in and give a little plug for the May webinar that we're doing. It's going to be all about governance and policy documents. So if you have a policy that hasn't been updated in a while, or if you don't have a policy and don't know where to start to create one, we're going to be talking about that in depth in about a month. So hope you'll come back and join us for that. But I know also, Matt, we have a lot of there's just a lot of lingo around cybersecurity. So I think before we got to our next poll, we were going to talk about some of the definitions for some of the things we're going to talk about.
Yes, thank you for that. And, you know, I kind of pride myself on, even though I'm a techie, I think I do a pretty good job of not talking in jargon, but I think this is a good reminder just to have some definitions and make sure that we're understanding the different concepts. So the one that we hear quite a lot in the cybersecurity world is MFA, or multi-factor authentication. If you're in the Google world, sometimes referred as 2SV or two-step verification. But it's this idea that we want to protect something that we know, which is your password, right? You know your password, along with something that you have, which is a multi-factor authentication token. Sometimes that's an app on your phone. It could be a physical security key. But the idea that there's kind of two steps to verify who you are, which means that it's harder for a hacker who, you know, is based somewhere else to get both of those things, right? So multi-factor authentication is a key piece around securing your digital identity. Single sign-on is a concept that goes along with identity. So as we are now in this cloud-first world, there's no longer, you know, log into the server and then you have access to all the applications. Now we have our login for our email, our login for our file system, separate login for your voice over IP system, your CMS, your CRM, your ERP, right? And so what single sign-on does is say, hey, instead of trying to manage and audit and report on the 50, 75, 100, 200 different logins that you have in order to access applications in your organization, now we're going to really strongly protect that in one, right? So we're going to have a really good password, really good MFA system, and we're going to track, monitor, and audit all of that identity so that we can grant you access to those 10, 15, 20, 50 applications that you need there. Again, all this, maybe we should have started with credentials, but I think what we see, and we'll see it in the data, is that credentials or identity is really where a lot of the issues are. And so that's the username and password that you use to log into systems. And so making sure that that is really well protected, because your digital identity is then used in so many other areas and can be used by the bad actors in order to ultimately commit kind of financial crime. We got some fun acronym, or not, I guess not an acronym, but a fun new made up word, smishing, or text-based phishing, right? So SMS combined with phishing gives us smishing. And again, there's other things that we're seeing a lot. I know I am getting a ton of these text messages, and they, range from, kind of pretty obvious, like, hey, click on this link, to authorize this package, to what we're seeing is a little bit more long-term or long play campaigns where, it may first appear like just somebody mistyped a contact, and like, it's like, oh, are you Kevin? It's like, well, no, I'm not Kevin. So, but then the person will begin then to interact, build confidence, and then use that as a way to say, oh, well, hey, can you, I need help, or can you click on this or open this for me? And so again, the best answer is just to delete those messages. Spoofing. That's whenever we've got messages that are appearing to come from somebody, or the obfuscation of that sender, typically showing up as your executive director. We have ransomware. And while this tends to be pretty prevalent in the news, this tends to be focused really on traditional on-premise networks. So that's when, an on-premise network will be compromised and data encrypted, and then the threat actors are then, holding your data for ransom. MGM had a big case. It causes tremendous impact to businesses. I think in the cloud-based, cloud-first network, this is much less of a risk than it is if organizations have traditional server infrastructure, where I think the risk is much, much more significant. We have called threat actor. It's kind of a generic term for the hacker, threat actor, right? All these terms are pretty much interchangeable, all leading to, as I've said, kind of this wire fraud, which is, federal crime. If you're a victim of this, it's something you can report to the FBI. And that's basically financial crime that occurs, over the internet or electronic means. And then we've got the QR code, which I guess that's kind of a little example of a QR code here. Funny looking thing, but basically a way to generate a complex link. And so these things are everywhere, but they're also, the threat actors are using them to, get you to click on links. And then finally, this malware browser pop-up, and I'll talk about this a little bit in the data as well, but this is part of a social engineering attack, right? So it's when you maybe stumble onto a website or something pops up, and all of a sudden it's claiming you have a virus or your computer's under threat and it's being encrypted and you need to call this number or not close your computer, right? So it's just messaging, right? But it really creates that sense of, panic. And, again, the easiest thing to do is just close the tab and it'll go away, but it can really lead to wire fraud and other cases of financial fraud. So,
and I feel like I have a couple of friends whose parents have fallen for that. Like, it really freaks you out to see that pop up. And one of my friend's mom called the number on it to get help to get rid of this malware on her her laptop, which, of course, the number was the person who had put it there to begin with. And then they were, quote unquote, helping her clean up her laptop, her personal laptop. So it's definitely, I feel like I've seen it more recently. But I want to make sure we get to our next poll. For those of you who did have a cybersecurity incident in 2023, which, given our first poll, not a lot of you did. So maybe Matt will extend this. If you have ever had a cybersecurity incident that you know about at your organization, what kind did you have? So the options are none, virus, malware, or a generic attack. So it wasn't specific to your organization or you yourself. Ransomware, and a ransom was demanded and or paid. compromised account. So the credentials were suspected or confirmed to have been hacked. So somebody was sending out emails like on your behalf from that seemed to be from you. And business email compromise, that's what that one is. Your email is used to target others. So you know that it's been compromised. Advanced persistent threat. So that is precise and targeted. I think, Matt, we sometimes see that with certain kinds of advocacy organizations, or they're working in countries where
foreign governments, state-sponsored actors.
That's really targeting them.
Really bad stuff.
Exactly. Wire fraud. So money was sent to the hacker's account. Somehow they convinced you to click on something or change the bank numbers or whatever it was. Other, you can put in chat if you feel comfortable describing it, and then not applicable. And this is multiple choice. So if you had multiple incidents happen to you, you can click all of the ones that apply. And you can see there's quite a variety, both of the things that could happen and of their severity. So Matt, can you see that? And would you read that for us?
So it looks like, again, a lot of folks saying no instance. With about 17% of respondents saying, yeah, like we had like a virus or malware or some other sort of kind of device-based attack. A small percentage did have experienced ransomware and kind of demanded or maybe even paid in cryptocurrency. A reasonable chunk here, about 22%, a quarter of folks had compromised account. About a quarter of folks have experienced business email compromise and spoofing. Again, a small percentage have experienced that advanced persistent threat. And I think that's what we do categorize as kind of a state-sponsored actor. And they're not necessarily looking for money. They're looking for persistence and data and information about the organization, maybe the research, the people. 7% of folks have experienced wire fraud. And again, I'm not surprised at that number. I think from the hacker's perspective, right, it's a lot easier to scam you into sending them money than it is to deploy some sophisticated malware and get you to buy Bitcoin and do all of that.
And I want to jump in. Someone did put in under the other what had happened to them, that someone tested stolen credit card numbers via a Square link. And So they have now changed to PayPal, but were surprised, or maybe not surprised, but unhappy to find that Square tech support didn't give them a lot of help when that attack was happening to them. So thank you for sharing that with us.
We've got, I think a range of experiences, and I think we'll see how that compares to the sample data that we have in our report here.
Thank you for joining Community IT for this podcast, part one. Subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts and leave us a rating to help others find this leadership resource for nonprofits. Listen for part two in your podcast feed. Community IT does these free webinars and podcasts for our community, and we love sharing our knowledge and experience. If you have more questions or are having trouble with your IT at your nonprofit, please get in touch with us on our website, www.communityit.com, so we can start a conversation or schedule an assessment. Downloading any of our free resources there will get you signed up for our webinar reminders, and you can attend our next webinar in real time and ask our experts your own questions. If you love podcasts, please subscribe and leave us a rating to help others find this leadership resource for nonprofits.